Welcome to Curing with Sound, a podcast presented by the Focus Ultrasound Foundation. I'm your host, Allison Preston-Smith. In recognition of Women's Health Month, the foundation hosted a discussion about Focus Ultrasound's impact on conditions disproportionately affecting women. These include uterine fibroids, breast tumors, Alzheimer's, chronic pain, and more. The session features expert speakers, including Dr. Lynn Dangle, surgical oncologist at UVA Health and senior advisor to the Focus Ultrasound Foundation, and Dr. Alyssa Kanafagu, professor of biomedical engineering and radiology at Columbia University. The conversation was led by Dr. Suzanne LeBlanc, neuroradiologist and director of clinical relationships at the Focus Ultrasound Foundation, and Dr. Jessica Foley, chief scientific officer at the foundation. Whether you're a healthcare professional, researcher, or someone interested in the latest in medical technology, this discussion offers essential insights into how Focus Ultrasound is shaping the future of women's health. Please enjoy.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. I'm Jessica Foley, Chief Scientific Officer and a Managing Director at the Focused Ultrasound Foundation. I've been leading our efforts promoting advancement of women in the field of focused ultrasound, including the Women in Focused Ultrasound Interest Group that we launched just over 3 years ago. And I also lead our government affairs and advocacy work. And there are some exciting developments in the policy landscape for women's health research that serve as a backdrop to our discussion today. May is a Women's Health Awareness Month, and so we thought it'd be a perfect time to hear from some of the extraordinary women leaders in our community about the breadth of focused ultrasound applications in transforming women's health. So we're pleased to have a great panel with us today, including Dr. Suzanne LeBlanc, neuroradiologist and director of clinical relationships at the Focused Ultrasound Foundation, Dr. Lynn Dangle, surgical oncologist at the University of Virginia and senior advisor for the Focused Ultrasound Foundation, and Dr. Alyssa Kanafagu, professor of biomedical engineering and radiology at Columbia University. So before we get started, just a few technical items. If your connection is lost, please simply log in again using your registration link. And at the conclusion of today's webinar, you'll receive a link to the event recording as well. And at any time, please feel free to submit your questions using the Q&A function at the bottom of your screen, and we'll try to address as many of these as we can. So let's get started. I'd like to preface our discussion by highlighting some of the recent policy developments that are really igniting the women's health landscape right now and creating exciting opportunities as well for our focused ultrasound community. So during President Joe Biden's most recent State of the Union address, he emphasized the critical need to address the historical underfunding of women's health research, despite the fact that women make up more than half of the U.S. population. And he urged Congress to allocate $12 billion to fund women's health research. This would help advance goals of his White House initiative on women's health research that was previously established in November of 2023 and is spearheaded by First Lady Jill Biden. So this is a major effort now from the White House. And the funding would be intended to support efforts to maximize prevention, diagnosis, and treatment for a range of conditions that either solely, uniquely, or disproportionately affect women. So those could include things like rheumatoid arthritis, menopause, Alzheimer's disease, pain, depression, heart disease, endometriosis, and many others. And also as part of this big government-wide effort, the Advanced Research Projects Agency for Health, ARPA-H, announced a $100 million sprint for women's health. They launched that this past February. And that program focuses funding on potentially transformative research and development to address the wide range of diseases that are predominantly affecting women, with the intent of supporting researchers and startups working on these innovative solutions. And I know that several in our focused ultrasound community have taken advantage of that program, submitting initial proposals, and we're hopeful that, you know, at least some of those will be asked to submit full proposals and end up getting some of this funding. So these new initiatives have been rolled out and really culminated then in the president's executive order that was released on March 18th. This is the first executive order specifically on women's health research, and it's called Advancing Women's Health Research and Innovation. And this executive order provided some more details on all of these government-wide efforts, including some of the primary goals, things like increasing the representation of women in clinical trials and better understanding why and how women experience many diseases differently than men. The foundation, of course, strongly supports these initiatives with these goals to integrate and prioritize women's health across the federal government. But I think it's also important to note that Focus Ultrasound as a field is already prioritizing clinical conditions that solely, uniquely, or disproportionately affect women. And we'll hear today about Focus Ultrasound's use in treating uterine fibroids, endometriosis, and other gynecological conditions, as well as malignant and benign breast tumors, Alzheimer's disease, chronic pain, depression, and anxiety. And Focus Ultrasound is also making strides in many other conditions that we won't discuss today, but that majorly impact women, things like heart disease, rheumatoid arthritis, and many others. So really, Focus Ultrasound is a technology that's at the forefront of innovation, revolutionizing healthcare, and really empowering women's wellness. So now let's start to hear from our panelists. So each of them will share their expertise and highlight the potential for Focus Ultrasound to treat a range of clinical conditions that are impacting women's health today. So we'll start with Dr. Susie LeBlanc. Susie, you have a vast experience with using Focus Ultrasound for treating uterine fibroids. So I wonder if you can share some of the history there of Focus Ultrasound in that condition, including some of the challenges that we still have with patient access.
Sure. Thanks, Jessica. And thanks for inviting me to participate today. I'm very fortunate to be here along with the other panelists. So thank you so much. So, you know, the story with uterine fibroids is really interesting. It was actually the first FDA approved indication back in 2004. And, you know, fibroids is extremely prevalent, right? There's over 10 million women in the U.S. that suffer from fibroids. It's about 25 to 50% of all females around the world in childbearing age. And, you know, some women think of it as a very personal problem, right? They don't want to discuss all of their symptoms like pain, excessive bleeding, infertility. And some people want to talk about it at girls' night out or, you know, really make it known out there and share it with other people. But the problem is millions of women are suffering from it. And let's just take the U.S., for example. 10 million women have symptomatic uterine fibroids. Only 500,000 are getting treated definitively with a hysterectomy, and about another 100,000 are getting interventional procedures such as uterine artery embolization or even a myomectomy, where they do surgery to just take out the fibroid. So the overwhelming majority of women maybe are taking some medicines that may be partly effective only when they're on the medicines, or they're not taking anything at all because they don't like the treatment options, right? So back in 2004, I had the privilege of treating the first patient after FDA approval. And it was really amazing, right? I had the patient lying face down on my MRI table, and I programmed the machine to have this ultrasound beam go right through their skin while they're laying awake on the table with no incisions at all. I was able to see the beam go right into the fibroid, where we heated it up to 60 degrees Celsius or 160 degrees Fahrenheit to thermally ablate the tissue. And over the course of the next 2 hours, I was able to ablate the fibroid. The woman got up from the table as if I had done nothing to her. And she's like, "Can I go to work tomorrow?" And I said, "Sure." And that's when it clicked to me that this really could be an important tool in the toolbox for patients to choose a therapy for their uterine fibroids, right? It's not as nearly as aggressive as surgery like hysterectomy or myomectomy with the downtime and the risks of surgery and general anesthesia. It's not an interventional procedure where you still have to stick needles in like uterine artery embolization or endometrial ablation. And it's not a medicine you have to take every day that may have some hormonal effects or other side effects. It's literally a one and done, no incisions, no general anesthesia. So I'm thinking, you know, if women had access to this incredible technology, how we could really improve the health and wellness of these women, right? They're incapacitated. They have lost work days. They're unable to take care of their children when they're symptomatic. And it really, really affects their quality of life. So let me tell you a little bit about where we are today. Over the years, a lot of studies have been done with focused ultrasound machines for uterine fibroids. And unfortunately, we do not have widespread insurance reimbursement in the United States. But let's talk about what's going on around the world in the state of the field so we put it in perspective. Focused ultrasound for fibroids accounts for 1/4 of all the focused ultrasound treatments around the world in 2022. There were 100,000 focused ultrasound procedures done, 25,000 were for uterine fibroids. If we're talking about overall treatments of focused ultrasound to date around the world, which is about 560,000, focused ultrasound for fibroids is about 200,000. So almost a third of all the focused ultrasound treatments are for fibroids. Incredible need for it. Now, let's talk about accessibility. There are 319 sites that treat uterine fibroids around the world. 270 are in Asia, 32 are in Europe, and only 11 in North America. Okay, so you have a huge amount of people getting uterine fibroids, but we don't have a lot of machines in the United States yet. Let's take that in contradistinction to focused ultrasound for prostate diseases. 100,000 treatments out of 565,000 to date, so less than uterine fibroids. Yet there are 432 sites. And you know how many sites there are in the United States to treat prostate? 171. More than 10 times for uterine fibroids, right? So we see there's a disparity. So many women could potentially benefit from this treatment. And we really need to bring the technology and reimbursement here in the United States. So I really think women could benefit from this incredible technology and have a choice of how they want to be treated.
Yeah, I mean, I think right there, Susie, you're hitting on the need for a focus on conditions like fibroids that seem to not be getting the attention that they should. So I wonder, you know, I know we now know the challenges with fibroids, but focused ultrasound is also being used to treat various other gynecological conditions. Can you talk about those? And hopefully some of those may have a better chance at getting, you know, not having quite the access issues.
Yeah. Let's talk about adenomyosis for a second, right? Adenomyosis is when there's extension of glandular elements into the uterus itself. And it may look like a fibroid on imaging studies, but it's different, right? And the challenge is that a lot of these women are of childbearing age and they still want to preserve their fertility. So they don't want a hysterectomy. An adenomyectomy, where they go in and just take out the adenomyotic tissue, is actually much more difficult than doing a myomectomy because it's not as well defined and it can regrow as well. And a lot of the interventional procedures are not effective for it. And the medications are ineffective or very short-lived. So it turns out that focused ultrasound has shown great results in studies around the world for treating adenomyosis, focal thermally ablating the adenomyotic tissue. So again, I think this is a great indication. And because the surgical alternatives are really not good in this patient population who wants to preserve their fertility, adenomyosis is a great indication for focused ultrasound. And another gynecological disease that's recently gotten some great attention is endometriosis. That's where there's tissue from the lining of the uterus that gets outside the uterus. It can be in the peritoneum or the abdomen, but sometimes when it goes along the surface of the rectum or in between the uterus and the rectum, it's called deep infiltrating endometriosis. And it actually occurs in up to 5 to 20% of women that have endometriosis. And it can cause extreme pain, diarrhea, constipation, rectal bleeding, tenesmus or rectal spasms, and infertility. And sometimes there's complications where you can get, you know, rupture through the rectum itself. And again, surgery is not a great option. But recently, there's a company called EDAP, and their Focal One platform received breakthrough designation with the FDA to treat deep infiltrating endometriosis. And it was based on a study of 60 patients where their symptoms decreased anywhere from 1 to up to 6 months after they had the focused ultrasound treatment. And there were very minimal complications. So now patients with deep infiltrating endometriosis can have access to a treatment that's completely non-invasive. So we're very excited that that company just got breakthrough designation by the FDA.
That's great. Thanks, Susie, for that update. I think we have a Still a lot of work to do in the gynecological space, but I'm hopeful that we'll, you know, Focus Ultrasound will have some great treatments out there for women. So moving now to Dr. Lynn Dingle. So Lynn, you know, every day you treat patients with benign and malignant breast tumors. Can you talk to us about, you know, the current status for breast treatments and where you think that focused ultrasound has a potential?
Absolutely. Thank you also, Susie, for setting that up so well, and for all of you for inviting me to this panel. Susie, there's so many parallels with what you were saying about uterine fibroids and breast fibroadenomas. So a breast fibroadenoma is a benign tumor in the breast, and they are seen up to about 15% of women, mostly in the younger ages, so around 20, 25 years old. And the current treatment outside of focus ultrasound or other experimental treatments is usually just observe them, but they can be symptomatic where they're causing the patient's pain. And also they can be increasing in size. And so we do excise these tumors for either of those two indications fairly commonly. And because the lesions themselves are so common, you know, we do about in the U.S. about 500,000 excisions a year of a benign fibroadenoma. And so focus ultrasound has been explored, although is not approved. I think at clinicaltrials.gov, there's about 20 trials right now looking at using focus ultrasound. There was a small single institution trial at UVA, which was carried out and shown that the application of focus ultrasound, like Susie explained, you know, awake patient, no surgical excision, very well tolerated, reduced the volume by about 69%. And because these are benign, they don't have to go away completely. We just need them to get smaller so that patients don't have symptoms from them and we can monitor them and they're not disrupting other, you know, quality of life. So it's very promising, but again, something that we don't quite have access to outside of the clinical trials that are now open. I think as we broaden our lens a little bit and look beyond the treatment of these benign tumors, just to speak to, I think, where there's great potential for focus ultrasound in women's health and breast treatments is around the use with malignant tumors. And so there are different trials looking at ablating malignant tumors, and that's all still to be determined, because in general with malignant tumors, we want to get a margin around the tumor. So we don't just ablate them, because we want to actually get the negative tissue, get the normal tissue around. But a big potential of focus ultrasound is to change the tumor environment. And so when our body's innate immune system is really powerful at killing things that are dangerous to us, like infections and tumor cells. But tumors are super smart, and they create kind of an eggshell around themselves, and it limits the ability of our immune system to go into the tumor and do what it's supposed to do and kill off those tumor cells. And so focus ultrasound has a lot of potential to shake up that eggshell and change the environment within the tumor so that we, our own immune system, or perhaps in combination with immune therapy drugs out there, we can use focus ultrasound to leverage that immune response. And I think we have trial open right now at UVA doing that. And I think there's just great potential for the immunologic impact of focus ultrasound when we think about treating breast cancer.
That's great. So, you know, in terms of the immunotherapy combination aspect, what would it be like? What role would the focus ultrasound be playing in those combination therapies, and why are they needed? What do we currently, the state of immunotherapy for, say, breast cancer? How effective is it?
Yeah. So, I also treat melanoma. And so melanoma is a good example of a cancer that's very immunogenic, meaning that our immune system is pretty good at getting into a melanoma tumor and treating melanoma cells. But breast cancer is what we call a cold tumor. In general, most breast cancers, when you look at them under a microscope, we don't see your immune response. So the patient doesn't have their immune cells, their lymphocytes getting into that environment, and the tumors are what we call cold. And so by giving drugs that boost the immune system, it's not as effective if the immune cells aren't getting in there. So you can give systemic IV therapies called immunotherapies, which may increase the amount of immune cells in your blood system. But if those cells can't get to the tumor, then it doesn't have the clinical impact. And so by combining it with focus ultrasound, the focus ultrasound ablation, as Susie describes it, heats the tissue. And so we can heat the tissue to a degree where we cause a reaction in the tissue that sends a signal to the body that there's danger here and we need our help from our immune system, and also breaks down some of the barriers that typically the tumor uses to keep the immune cells out.
Great. And, you know, for those of you listening who are not aware, there's a large field now of kind of exploring focused ultrasound in immuno-oncology, and specifically combining focused ultrasound with immunotherapies for, as Lynn mentioned, melanoma, breast cancer, things like glioblastoma, pancreatic cancer. So that's a whole other area that is, you know, really heating up these days. Okay, so thank you, Lynn. Now we'll talk to Dr. Alyssa Kanafagu. So Alyssa, you also have some experience with breast tumor, so I wonder if you can share your perspective there as well.
Sure, absolutely. And thanks so much to the foundation and to Jessica for organizing this. It's very relevant, long overdue, but here we are. So my group has been focusing a lot on breast cancer, both on the aspect of diagnostics but also with therapeutics, and especially with ablation. We're not there yet, but we are very excited to one day have this treatment be exactly what Susie mentioned for fibroids, have no incisions, and then the patient, no anesthesia, and the patient can be treated within a few minutes and then go wherever she needs to go next, which is work or vacation or whatever, back to family or whatever it is that she wants to go. So that's our dream. So for breast cancer, giving an ultrasound guided aspect, very similar to what is approved for prostate cancer. And it's astounding how many treatments are actually being done right now with ultrasound guided, focused ultrasound for prostate, but we still have nothing going on, or as much as we could have going on, I think, to make breast cancer treatment with FUS a reality on a daily basis. So we work with both fibroadenomas, and Lynn mentioned that they're actually the most common tumor. Likely, it's benign. The most common breast cancer tumor, breast tumor, is benign. It hits young women, so ionizing radiation is not what you want to have for these young patients in their 20s and 30s. So I think focused ultrasound is really the perfect modality for that, and it also can contain the tumor at its start, because we can actually detect fibroadenomas pretty fast, especially with ultrasound imaging. On the malignant side, there's a lot that focused ultrasound can do, including immunotherapy that Lynn mentioned, and ablation as well, and also the sonoporation aspects, and including hyperthermia and radiosensitizing the tumor. So all these efforts can be done with the same focused ultrasound beam. Sometimes, including, I think, most of us use them separately. We either do ablation or we do immunomodulation, or we do sonoporation. And I think it will be wonderful to actually have a combo therapy with focused ultrasound, because there's a lot that can be done, maybe radiosensitizing first and then going for potentially sonoporation, immunotherapy, and then ablation. And I think that could be a treatment that can be done, hopefully, patient procedure, especially for non-metastatic tumors, of course. I mean, primary tumors for malignant, but especially also for benign tumors. So I can't wait for that to basically be something that we can all get behind. Jessica, that's all I have to say for it. But we have a clinical trial open, and the last thing I want to say is that this is when women really call us on the phone or by email, because they see the clinical trial and they say, I don't want an incision. I just want to have my tumor treated. And most of the time we take them on to the hospital here. But there is definitely a need, and patients would love for this non-invasive blood bloodless procedure to happen.
And Alyssa, if you don't mind me stepping in here, but you know, Lynn and Alyssa, you know, I like to share, I'm a breast cancer survivor and I had surgery, and you know, there's complications from the surgery, there's pain, there's persistent, you know, side effects from the surgery that you have. And I would welcome a procedure where my primary tumor could have been ablated or treated non-invasively and then combined with either sonopermeation to enhance drug delivery or an immunotherapy to treat my disease. So I am actively watching your research for both of you, because I hope that in the future, hopefully yeah. I will never need it, but my friends and family members, you know, that all of us will benefit from an incisionless treatment for breast cancer. So thank you for your research.
Thank you for this perspective. And this is actually what patients also go through. And of course, we're so thankful to our patients. I mean, I want to say this almost every time, because these women, we also look at a chemotherapy aspects, and Susie, of course, you have seen it up front, but up close, I mean, but it's, yeah, it's they're our patients, I mean, are incredible. The way they're volunteering and the care, and they stay, you know, longer for the treatment to just make sure it works. And I have been amazed by that aspect more than anything, you know, more than anything else. So I think the women are ready, the patients are ready, they're ready to embrace this modality, and they know the power that it can have.
And, you know, I think that's great. And Susie, thank you for sharing your perspective there as a patient. And I think what you both touched on, which is important, and we've seen in this discussion on breast cancer, is really the versatility of focused ultrasound as just one tool in the armamentarium for clinicians to treat cancers. And as Alyssa mentioned, it could be a sensitizer for radiation, meaning you might need less radiation. Of course, we talked about how it could be potentially enhance delivery of drugs, or maybe more localized delivery of drugs, even to avoid systemic toxicity from chemotherapy. And then, of course, we talked about the immune effects there as well, in addition to just the more standard ablation, to perhaps be an alternative to surgery in many cases. So that's a really interesting and powerful aspect of focused ultrasound, that it can really treat in all of these different ways, even one condition like breast cancer. So, you know, now I think we've touched on some conditions that either women only experience, or in the case of breast cancer, mostly it's women experiencing this. But then, of course, there are many other conditions which, you know, you may or may not realize are disproportionately disproportionately affect women. One of those is Alzheimer's disease. So actually 66% of Alzheimer's patients are women, which is huge, obviously. I mean, it begs the question as to why, and I think we're trying to understand some of that. But Alyssa, you have really been a pioneer in the use of focused ultrasound for treating Alzheimer's. So could you share, you know, some of your work, as well as just the status of work in the Alzheimer's space? You know, how close are we to really having clinical treatments for this?
Sure. So yes, exactly what you said, Jessica. We are twice as likely after the age of 60 as women to get Alzheimer's than we are to get breast cancer. So it's incredible, and I think it's frightening, given what breast cancer, how rampant breast cancer is right now. So if we're lucky to go past the age of 60, then we have to face Alzheimer's as women. We also don't fare very well. I think the progression is twice as fast as men. So it's not that you're going to get it and it's going to be slow. It's going to be twice. So in any case, we need to do a lot there. We have been working, obviously, with neurology and neurosurgery here at Columbia, and we have been very fortunate to have access to the patients. And we have gotten more female patients than male patients to volunteer. I mean, we have a small study. We have included 6 patients. And we see that in women, we could potentially have bigger regions of open of volume. So we work with blood-brain barrier opening, which is a technique where you open the blood-brain barrier to allow the drugs to enter at higher volumes and higher concentration in the region where it's needed. And typically, we aim in the area where there's amyloid, and the reason why we aim where the areas where the brain has amyloid is because we can detect that with PET scans, positron emission tomography scans, that allow to show the beta amyloid, which is one of the proteins that characterize Alzheimer's. So this has been a success story for focused ultrasound. As some of us know, it turns out that even opening the barrier by itself without any drugs induces an immune response in the brain. And we have some immune cells inside our brain that are called microglia, which are intrinsic to the brain itself. And they're very hardworking, especially when ultrasound hits, they get alerted and then they start phagocytosing or breaking down the amyloid, which is great. But it has been done also with in combination with antibody therapy. So this is an FDA-approved drug as of, I think, 2021, aducanumab by Biogen, and then more recently, Leqembi, also by Biogen. And there's another drug in the pipeline. A couple of them are going to be probably approved, at least in the U.S. It's not around the world yet. And more recently, there was a study published in the New England Journal of Medicine by Dr. Rezai that showed that in combination with aducanumab, the first antibody, there's a higher reduction of amyloid as a result of the opening of the blood-brain barrier by focused ultrasound. So overall, focused ultrasound can really help the existing FDA-approved therapies, or by itself, it can actually induce reduction of the amyloid. And women, because we have generally thinner skulls, so we do, the procedure is done transcranially, so again, completely non-invasively. And the thinner your skull, the higher the ultrasound energy that goes through it. And because typically women have thinner skulls, we actually get more of that energy in, and it could be potentially more efficient. Now, these studies have not been done, but through simulations, mathematical models, we can actually predict how much of this energy can go through. And that's the good news about women, that we can potentially treat more efficiently. I'll stop here for now.
Great. That's all really, really exciting work. And, you know, do we have any idea when we might, you know, now we're in several different clinical trials are ongoing for using focused ultrasound in Alzheimer's. Do we have any guesstimation, or Susie, maybe you want to jump into on when we might see this as a treatment option for patients?
Melissa, you want to take it? You want me to take it?
Please take that one.
Okay, so the FUS Foundation is supporting several studies, but there are many, and again, involving the versatility of focused ultrasound with opening the blood-brain barrier with or without drug delivery. Some neuromodulatory clinical trials are coming on now. So I don't think we know yet if there's any one mechanism of action that's best to treat Alzheimer's, or perhaps a combination of them. But I think the clinical trials are evolving. We're getting more patients involved in clinical trials. I don't think I can really give a good estimate on when we'll see it, but with the increasing numbers of clinical trials and the lack of great options for patients, I really hope that patients will come in and volunteer to do these clinical studies to potentially help their own case as well as help science. So hopefully if you go onto our website, fusfoundation.org, you can look up the different clinical trial sites and get involved for different stages of Alzheimer's disease. Some involve mild, some involve mild to moderate cases. So, you know, if you're interested, log on, because we need to finish these clinical trials to help, you know, rapidly get this to clinical patients ultimately.
So given, you know, as we just talked about, given the disproportionate impact of Alzheimer's on women, Are these trials sort of weighted to try to have more women involved? Or, I mean, I know that that is an area that's lacking, as I mentioned up front, and that's an area that these women's health initiatives are, you know, are trying to address. But I think many people in women's health have been trying to address this for years, that, you know, there tend to be a lack of women in some of these trials. So I wonder if you could comment on that.
Unfortunately, I'm not aware of any clinical trial, you know, specifically recruiting women more than men. But I can tell you, we're probably going to change our percentages to reflect the population that's affected. You know, so I have to tell you, I wasn't that aware until a year ago that that women are that affected, I'm sorry to say. And also, we have seen ARPA-H, as that you mentioned, Jessica, earlier, that announced the women's health also, and they had 7 or 8 different categories. One of them was Alzheimer's, specifically for women, and specifically for looking at lymphatics. So that's actually a region of the brain where you drain whatever it is in your brain that's not needed by the brain. So almost like a garbage kind of disposal of the brain, if you will. I'm putting it very, very mildly. I'm not a biologist, I'm an engineer. So please correct me. We have 2 MDs on the panel. And that also breaks down in Alzheimer's. It's not just the fact that we have amyloid and tau, the other protein deposit in the brain, and the neurons are slowly dying. We also cannot get rid of those toxic proteins in our brain as women. I was very excited to see that they're actually focusing on that. Now, lymphatics are also affected by focused ultrasound. Some of the groups out there are actually starting to actually look at that, and especially how we have in the cerebral spinal fluid aspect. So that's running basically from the ventricles in our brain and into our spinal cords, how this is affected potentially by focused ultrasound as well. And it is. We have seen some starts of that in my group, but also other people have actually reported it. So long story short is that the blood-brain barrier does open to get the drugs in and potentially do this immunomodulation of the brain, but also you can activate and accelerate the way that that amyloid or tau could potentially get discarded by the brain. So that's an aspect that is very exciting to see that ARPA-H is embracing, and only for women.
That's interesting. And I think, you know, as we'll see with some other conditions as well, where women might be impacted more, or the disease manifests in women differently. We're learning so much there in terms of the science, the biology, the clinical aspects. We're also learning so much about focused ultrasound and how it can impact in those ways. So I think as we move forward, you know, we're going to maybe find that, you know, again, there are certain people that the way that the disease manifests in them, this type of focused ultrasound is more impactful than another type. So again, the versatility of the ultrasound is important. Okay, so the one, you know, last thing I wanted you to touch on, Alyssa, is also pain, because we know that pain is a huge area for, you know, so many patients, but again, more women experience chronic pain than men. So you've done a lot of work in that space too.
Yes. Unfortunately, the news is not very good also there. So chronic pain affects women at rates upwards to 3 times more than men. So approximately, and the carpal tunnel that we're actually concentrating on affects about 6 to 7 million women in the U.S., just the carpal tunnel. The other aspect that ARPA-H also, this is also an aspect that ARPA-H also addressed in one of their initiatives, and specifically for actually having pain, having women being believed that they're actually having pain. And so I really recommend that people go and see the statistics there, that women are in pain and they're not believed, that they're assumed that they're actually exaggerating their pain or pain levels. So the initiative was actually to be able to have measurements, quantitative measurements and objective measurements of pain, which is very hard right now. So also anxiety that also sometimes is induced by pain affects women twice as much as men. Focused ultrasound, we actually, this is the other aspect that we haven't really talked much, which was the neuromodulation. So that you can affect the nerve function and the brain function without opening the blood-brain barrier, other aspects that we talked about. Just the fact that you can actually, quote unquote, numb pain with focused ultrasound. And we're working on especially peripheral chronic pain, like I mentioned, the carpal tunnel syndrome. And we have seen that the way that focused ultrasound can almost intercept what happens on the nerves. So basically that send the signal to the brain could have some therapeutic effects. And actually patients are reporting that several days later, they have a pain level of at least 2 or 3 times lower than they started with. Of course, this is only a few patients. I think we have about 6 or 8 patients there too, but other people have been also, other groups and clinical studies have also been reporting something along these lines. And also the other aspect is basically focused ultrasound in the brain. So instead of intercepting the signal that's sent by the periphery, being able to treat pain in the brain itself. So there's a lot that can be done there just with ultrasound alone, changing the way that the actual pain signal is recorded, is processed in the brain, but also the way that it travels to the brain, something that can be done.
Great. That's exciting since so many people are suffering from that. And then, you know, I wanted to go back to you, Susie, quickly. I know that, you know, depression, Alyssa touched on anxiety. Depression and anxiety are also conditions that disproportionately affect women. And I know there's been a lot of work in recent years with focused ultrasound in treating those conditions as well as other kind of mental health related conditions. So could you touch on that?
Yeah, sure. And thank you, Alyssa, for bringing up the versatility of focused ultrasound and doing this neuromodulation, right? Changing the way that nerves work. It's not thermal ablation where you're heating up the nerve. It's not blood-brain barrier opening. It's just kind of making neurons that are not firing enough, firing them more, or taking neurons that are firing too much and make them fire less for simplicity. But with depression, I think there's a lot of promise. And depression, Jessica, is a huge problem. It was there before COVID. It's exacerbated during COVID. It can manifest in so many different ways, right? Between just a mood decline, loss of interest in things, just even for women feeling guilty about things, decreased appetite, sleep changes. I looked up some numbers and I was overwhelmed by the numbers. There's 18 million adults in the US that suffer from depression, 300 million worldwide. The prevalence is different, right? More in women. It's 10.5% in women versus 6.2% in men. So almost double, right? Responsible for suicide. And in fact, every 12 minutes, someone dies of depression from suicide. It's more often in men that commit suicide, but clearly women suffer from it more. Lost work days, ability to take care of your children. And, you know, a subset of people with depression is postpartum depression, which occurs in about 15% of women, anywhere from 1 week to 1 month after they give birth. So just think about all the numbers of births and 15% of them suffer from postpartum depression. I mean, it's really frightening, right? Medication is a way to treat it, but people are either non-compliant on their medicines or have significant side effects from medicine. Then slightly more invasive treatments could include things like transcranial magnetic stimulation or electrical convulsive therapy. And even if necessary, if it's really severe, they could have surgical procedures with electrodes put in their brain like DBS or even surgical lesioning, right? So there's not a lot of great options, yet so many people are suffering. So how can focused ultrasound fit in the toolbox here? Well, there's a couple of different mechanisms of action, right? There is thermal ablation that's being studied where you can actually ablate a certain tract in a part of the brain called the internal capsule. And patients have gotten much better with it on clinical studies. You can also do blood-brain barrier opening. Like we talked about, immune cells come in, but it also enhances neurogenesis. So maybe new neurons can start to go where there's not enough neurons and help improve you know, the depression, but perhaps the greatest field of interest in depression is with this neuromodulation, right? So there's lots of different companies invested in about 10 clinical studies right now going on to help do neuromodulation, investigating different areas of the brain, some in the front of the brain, some more deep in the brain, to see if we can help patients with depression. So again, I think there's a lot of promise, and especially for women out there who are suffering from this disproportionately. You know, if you can put a kind of like a helmet-like device or a strap over your head and do some neuromodulation completely non-invasively for a few minutes a day or a few times a week, instead of the other options of medicine or interventional procedures or surgery, you know, maybe we can, you know, lessen the symptoms, improve the symptoms, perhaps even cure it one day with a certain type of protocol for neuromodulation. So I think the potential benefit of having a completely non-invasive procedure for depression really could help a lot of women out there.
That's great. I mean, that would be definitely much needed. So I wanted to, you know, have some time for questions from the audience and then maybe ask you guys a couple questions if we have more time. So we've gotten a few questions. One, I know you touched on this, Alyssa, but maybe just explain a little bit more. The question was, does focus ultrasound have an effect or benefit on neuropathic pain?
Yes, that's what I can say. Again, it's a small study. But other people have also shown that. We've also looked at nociceptive pain and both of them can be affected. And the effect can be actually, as I mentioned, sustained over a few days. Now, we haven't really done longitudinal studies to tell you, you know, exactly how many sessions are needed or how long the effect will last or if there's a cure. But all I can say is basically exactly what Susie touched on. And because we work with neurosurgeons that work with neuropathic pain patients, and usually the alternative when the drug treatments don't work, and we all aware of the opioid crisis, of course, is that they will actually put this electrodes inside the nerve, touch the nerves themselves, so this occurs an incision and deep penetration all the way into the nerve, and that alone causes pain. I mean, you're trying to treat pain by causing pain. It's very paradoxical. It works in some patients, but you know, it's just very invasive to do over and over again. So the neurosurgeons themselves, at least here at Columbia, they have embraced this alternative of making sure that you can have repeated sessions with focused ultrasound. So the good news is that it works. We also use this quantitative aspect of measuring pain that I mentioned for that ARPA-H had this announcement for funding for proposals. And we put strap on EEGs because it's very difficult. The pain ratings are, as some of us know, are very subjective. They go from 1 to 10, usually 1 being or 0 being no pain, 10 being excruciating pain. So, the fact that you can also measure in the somatosensory cortex how this pain is recorded is also very important. So, yeah, it will work, and we just have to optimize it.
And I know there are clinical trials going on at some other places as well. I know at the University of Maryland, they've done some trials using ablation, focused ultrasound ablation for treating neuropathic pain. And we even had a congressional briefing back in April, and a patient there, Terry, who was just so passionate speaking about her experience being treated and has had great results even a couple of years later. So at least, you know, anecdotally, we definitely have patients that are experiencing success from those treatments. We also have a question around psychiatric studies and who actually does the procedure. Can a psychiatrist do the procedure? Does it need to be a neurosurgeon? Susie?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And you know, when you're dealing with the brain, there's always it's a team approach, right? You need for psychiatric disorders, you have neurosurgeons involved, of course, You have psychiatrists, neurologists, and as I am, a neuroradiologist who specializes in imaging. And everybody works together to pick the correct target, to make sure the parameters are set, and to monitor the procedures during the procedures as well as after the procedure. So who actually presses the button is actually an interesting discussion that we're still having. So currently, I think in most places, it is a neurosurgeon, and there are certain neurosurgeons who specialize in psychosurgery, psychiatric diseases. So they've been doing them. I think neuroradiologists are also equipped to do it because they have a very keen understanding of brain anatomy, 3D imaging, how to target. But I do think everyone should keep in mind that this is not isolated. This is a team approach. This is a great example of medicine working in collaboration with teams to all contribute their expertise to these procedures. So,
yeah. Great. And that kind of leads into something that came up in another question here, which I think is, again, one of the challenges that we face in the field of focused ultrasound is really raising awareness of the potential of it with physicians, particularly with those physicians that would be referring physicians to the specialists that might actually do the treatment. So the question is kind of around what the foundation is doing there, but I think it'd also be interesting to know, you know, Lynn, from your perspective, as a clinician, you know, how did you get involved in this? Why do you think focus ultrasound is so important to bring into your practice? And then speaking as a clinician, what do you think we can do to help so that more clinicians are really aware of this and we can build clinician champions to really push this forward?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I think, you know, coming from the perspective of breast cancer and melanoma, those two cancers are already have a history of being treated by multidisciplinary teams. So I think that, as Susie mentioned, you know, we do our best medicine for our patients when we work together. And one of the things I love about my two areas of specialty is that they tend to be team approaches to the decisions that we're making for our patients. So it's somewhat already built in into our approach. What drove me to get involved as a surgeon, because yes, of course, this is an alternate to the traditional care that I provide, and I love to operate. I love to be a surgeon. So, but I, you know, I think there needs to be a better way for our patients. And I see opportunities both in terms of the benign, you know, avoiding a trip to the operating room, avoiding an excision. And then also the potential for patients who aren't responding to traditional immunotherapies. And can we use focus ultrasound as a tool to boost that response? So I think, you know, it really comes from the patient need and seeing problems present in the clinic that we don't have the best solution for, and seeing focus ultrasound as an opportunity to provide a better treatment protocol for those patients. As far as what we can do, I think, you know, the foundation does so much in terms of just this, you know, these types of webinars and workshops, and so much to build awareness and bring really welcome people into the community who might not be as experienced, and really provide environments for them to learn about focus ultrasound. And I think also it's our duty to present our findings and our research at meetings and in publications, and really get the word out there in the scientific literature.
Yeah, and I'd like to add to that. You know, I think the foundation does a great job, just like Lynn was describing, on so many fronts, right? Number one, patient education, because patients demand better treatments and deserve better treatments. So they'll go to their doctors and say, listen, I heard about this. Tell me about it, right? Then you go to the medical and surgical society meetings and present the research and have seminars on focused ultrasound so they learn about it, right? Most doctors go into medicine because they're lifelong learners and they want to work with other people and learn new things and adopt new strategies, as Lynn said, to help their patients. So, you know, we need to do this on all fronts, from patients to physicians, and work together to help patients.
Great. Yeah, I think that that is becoming, you know, as the field of focus ultrasound is evolving more towards the clinic in so many different conditions, that is becoming a bigger challenge that we need to solve, is to really building those clinical champions to help us drive things forward. I wonder if we could just talk a little bit about some of the other big challenges that are existing for focus ultrasound, for focus ultrasound and women's health. I talked about these different policy initiatives, which are geared towards research. So are there big research questions that, come to mind? And then, of course, feel free to talk about other things that are beyond research that are, whether it's insurance coverage, other things that we've discussed. But maybe if each of you could just describe what you think are some of the big research related challenges that we're facing right now for any condition that you care about.
Well, I think, we were mentioning before how important it is to have clinician champions. And I don't want to leave out Alyssa and all of the other preclinical researchers, and engineers. What they do in the preclinical setting to get us prepared to transfer it from benchside to bedside is critical. So we need to perform the correct preclinical studies to make sure that we can translate it into the proper clinical studies in a safe way. So, Alyssa, I don't want to leave you out of this discussion. You are absolutely integral to us developing these commercializable systems that can help patients. So thank you. So I think it starts with defining what preclinical experiments need to be done to allow clinical translation. So Alyssa, maybe you can talk about some of the challenges that you face and like the models that you use and things like that.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Ultrasound in general, I think it's even in imaging is a modality that it's not completely foolproof. It's not ready to be used. Somebody has to train you, especially imaging is handheld, and it depends how you what is your hand-eye coordination. There's a lot of training there, and there is a steep learning curve. So focused ultrasound is similar. I feel that, it's straightforward, it works, but in the wrong hands, it can do nothing or it can do damage. So, or wrong kind of damage, I mean. So this is something that it's very important to have systems, like Susan mentioned, that are, can be a push of a button. I think we can do that. And make it easy for physicians to use, understand, use, and then also assess if something is going wrong. So have a way to have some kind of a feedback. So I think that's the biggest challenge. Other than that, and we're working hard on that. We're training clinicians here. Some of them are funded by the foundation. But we definitely want to potentially have a way that it can be a training session with the system, learning the basics, and then be good to go. And I think the more clinicians get the hands on a focused ultrasound system, the better.
And I know we talk a lot about sort of the field evolving to where we can develop standards for, how we report the treatment parameters or how we can compare. We haven't mentioned it, but there are, about 50 different focused ultrasound companies that are developing devices. And so, there could be many different devices that are being used to treat Alzheimer's, for instance. And how do we have a set of standards that everyone can use with the different devices so that they can compare across the devices, things like that. And that's also something we'll face in cancer for sure. There are many different devices out there. So that's one other area. Lynn, it looks like you wanted to chime in.
I think in addition to devices, Jessica, as we've talked about before, also the endpoints and what are we looking at and how do we measure success in immunotherapy, the immunotherapy aspect of focused ultrasound. So I think that is one of the challenges is just the complexity of the end results that we're looking at. And I'm very hopeful, though, because I think several years ago, I had to work on getting a trial through the FDA, and it took many, many years actually to get it through. And we've moved much more quickly recently. So I do think, if you had asked me this question a year ago, I would have also brought in the regulatory aspect, but I think that that's getting better. And I'm hopeful that, it's still a time consuming process by all means, but that seems to be moving in very much the right direction. And so I think, as investigators, I'm always happy to share my protocols and sort of share the endpoints and what I'm looking at. And I think that we can do that more often so we can save repeating work and share, collaborate not just across disciplines, but also across institutions and share what we're working on.
Yeah. And on that point, thanks, Lynn, for bringing that up. And Jessica, as you know, through your efforts, as well as the Focused Ultrasound Foundation, we really try to bring in the FDA into our workshops, into our guideline papers with pre-submissions, and get them involved so they understand what we're doing with parameter spaces and endpoints, harmonization of endpoints. And I think they are rapidly understanding that we're convening the field in a meaningful way so that we can move it into clinical trials and commercialization faster. So these efforts are going on at the individual researcher level, like with Lynn, and with the foundation as well, working with the FDA to try to move this process as quickly as possible.
Yeah, these are all really great points. And then I'll just add, of course, we know the big one, which is the hardest nut to crack, we think, and we still haven't figured out how to do it. And that's the insurance piece. So we're still, you know, I think many people are working on that. And obviously the better clinical evidence we have, whether it's comparative studies, if we can get those, that's going to be helpful in getting that broad insurance coverage. So it looks like we've, you know, been able to answer the questions here. We're running up on the time. So I'd like to thank all of you, all of our panelists for this really excellent discussion. This was really great. And thank all of you for joining us. So this concludes our webinar today. And if you want more information about Focus Ultrasound, about the foundation, please visit our website at fusfoundation.org, or you can email us at info@fusfoundation.org. So thank you all for joining us. Please stay tuned to our newsletter and our website for invitations for future webinars and online events. Have a great day, everyone.
This episode of Curing with Sound has been presented by the Focused Ultrasound Foundation. If you would like to learn more about Focused Ultrasound or the Foundation, visit our website at fusfoundation.org. You can also sign up for our newsletter and follow us on social media.